Trails are connectors.
They guide us from one place to another, but the path is rarely linear.
And the movement is less about the destination and more about the connections we make along the way, with the land, with each other, and with ourselves.
The Appalachian Trail winds 2,190 miles up the eastern spine of the United States. Though connected in 1937, the trail, the people who walk it, the animals who call it home, and the landscape it follows are ever evolving.
Where We Walk is a special 6-part series made in collaboration with the Appalachian Trail Conservancy with support from REI that explores the women who helped make the trail what it is today.
And those who will help shape its future.
I'm Gail Straub, host of She Explores and your guide through episode 4 of Where We Walk, in which we hear from two women who share a longing and a love for the Appalachian Trail.
I'm overwhelmed with what this trail has given me and so grateful for it. I think every day about trying to get back and doing it again, but also making sure that it's there so that other people can go back and have this experience and hopefully be able to find some piece of wisdom from their own experiences that's going to improve their life and improve the world that we all share together.
That was Brittany, who fulfilled her goal of thru-hiking the Appalachian Trail in 2019, despite facing the devastating loss of her husband a few years prior. Next, we'll hear a few words from Laura.
I personally think that the AT is the most beautiful trail out there. You know, you just need to go up there in the springtime with all of the moss and all of the little creeks. I don't know, it's just full of life and teeming with greenness.
Laura dreams of hiking the trail, but forces outside of her control have kept her from doing it this year. To thru-hike the Appalachian Trail is to walk all 2,193 miles of the trail in one season. It's a big investment. Typically, a hiker has to pause or quit their job in order to spend up to 7 months on trail. The most popular route is a northbound hike, which starts at Springer Mountain in Georgia and ends at Mount Katahdin in Maine. Upwards of 4,000 people attempt a thru-hike each season, and just 20 to 25% complete the journey. There's a lot of talk about the universal nature of the Appalachian Trail, and as someone who's never thru-hiked, I've even heard a lot of aphorisms. Hike your own hike, the trail provides, what goes down must go back up. And there are a lot of aspects of a thru-hike that unite a trail community. But the individuals that hike the AT bring their full, unique selves to the trail, which we should remember to celebrate too. And the two women featured today are no exception. Laura and Brittany are different in upbringing and background and temperament. Laura's Latina. She and her parents immigrated from Columbia to Georgia when she was 6 years old. Brittany's white and grew up in North Dakota. But they have something in common that's core to what attracts them to the trail, a need, at a particular point in their lives, to do something entirely for themselves. And if you, dear listener, are somewhere out there dreaming of a thru hike, our hope is that you'll listen to this episode and consider your why. It's as unique as the challenges you may need to overcome to get out there and the ups and downs you'll face along the way. But as you'll hear, it's the why that will help guide you through. First, we'll hear from Brittany, who goes by Flickertail on the trail. Flickertail is her trail name, which a lot of hikers either give themselves or are dubbed by other hikers while through hiking. Brittany shared the origin story of Flickertail.
Particularly in the beginning, I was moving fairly quickly, and I was hiking with these guys that, you know, were like, you're kind of like scurrying up the trail pretty quickly. And they found out that I'm originally from North Dakota, which is the Flickertail state, which of course, everybody knows North Dakota's the Flickertail state, right? I had thought about hiking the Appalachian Trail for quite some time. In fact, when my husband and I had originally had gotten married, I had tried to talk him into doing it for our honeymoon. He did not want to go on a 6-month hike. And so we thought maybe that wouldn't be the best way to start our marriage. So we compromised and we did a 100-mile backpacking trip through Peru. So, I mean, it wasn't a horrible compromise at all. And about a year after we got married, he had passed away, and I threw myself into work, just top to bottom, immersed myself in it until, you know, it got to the point where it was just breaking me in so many ways. And so I made the decision about a year before leaving for trail that next year was going to be my year. I needed a change in my life. I set a date. I decided that I was going to leave on his birthday, which was March 4th. And I thought that would be the perfect theme for my hike as well. It's kind of a march forward into a new world, a new life, an opportunity to kind of start really looking forward instead of just kind of dwelling on what sat in my past, and started making plans.
So when you started making those plans, you made the decision a year before setting foot on trail. What were some of the challenges that you had to overcome in order to get there, in order to make that happen?
I think there are a lot of the challenges that a lot of folks face, right? I had a lot of worries about how it was going to impact my career. I had concerns about what was I going to do money-wise, right? You're thinking about taking 6 months with no income. Mm. You know, I have older grandparents. I was concerned about what would happen if something happened to them while I was out on trail. The reality is I worried about what all of us worry about regardless, right? I mean, whether you're on trail, you're thinking about going on trail, or you're off trail, we're all worried about money. We're all worried about our career. We're all worried about our families. You know, so at some point I just kind of got to the fact and I was like, okay, I'm going to have these worries. They're just going to be presented a little bit differently once I'm on trail. And so, you know, in that lead up to trail, I just started, you know, trying to think about ways to kind of cut down on those concerns. So I was worried about my career, right? So I, you know, kind of cut a deal with a partner of mine and we started up our own business, right? So I had a place to come back to once I got off trail. I was worried about money. And so I went ahead and thought about creative ways where I could be saving a lot while I was on trail. So for example, I made all of my own food. And so I left trail and had 900 meals in the freezer that my family could be sending to me while I was out there. But, you know, those meals cost $2 a meal versus, you know, if you're buying stuff at gas stations and in trail towns, you're spending more than that per meal. So tried to cut down on some of those expenses and then just tried to spend as much time with my family as I possibly could. You know, all that being said, I like to say that the Appalachian Trail was like the most planned dive off of a cliff you could possibly have, right? Like, I mean, you can plan it all out and have every stop you think you'll take etched out. You can have every meal for the next 4.5 months planned. But when you get to Springer Mountain, you're looking forward and you're like, I'm jumping off a cliff. I have no idea what's going to come next. And so, you know, that was definitely present in the back of my mind as well, that, you know, some of it also, it's just a risk and it's just whether you're going to kind of jump off the cliff or not.
Brittany found that once she got on the trail, a lot of her pre-trail worries were put into perspective. For example, for all her careful planning, she still forgot to pack her camp stove, but she made it work. A quick heads up before we get to this next section. There are aspects of Brittany's story that might be hard to hear if you've grieved a partner or a spouse. So were there any moments where you felt like you wanted to give up?
No, I can honestly say no. I really loved, maybe love is a strong word. I really enjoyed every minute on trail. I didn't end up ever thinking about, you know, not wanting to continue on. And I think that part of it was that for me, the Appalachian Trail was something that I wanted to do. And for the 3.5 years prior to that, I had to do so many things that I didn't want to do. I had to plan a funeral as a 28-year-old. I had to figure out whether I was going to bury my husband at home near me or back by his family in New York. I had to fix the car by myself. I had to navigate how to go from a 2-income household to a single income household. I decide whether or not to sell my house. And when I did decide to sell the house, all the decisions that go along with it, how much stuff do I keep? How much do I want to give away? And was I also selling the life that I had once dreamed of having? And all of those things were things that I didn't want to do. And finally, I was out there on the trail and I was just doing something because I wanted to do it. I never set out any morning and said, I have to meet 20 miles or I have to hit a certain number of steps or what have you. I got up every morning not knowing where I was going to end up that night and just walking as far as I wanted to walk. And when I was done walking, I stopped, which meant I self-camped a lot, you know? I would make it to shelter sometimes, but, you know, sometimes I was a mile short and I was just done walking that day. And it was so empowering to me to just finally be able to make decisions according to what I felt was right.
Brittany relished her independence on trail, and while she connected with other hikers, she made sure she was able to hike on her own terms.
I really resisted the idea of a trail family just because I thought that for myself, it was very important to just get out there and hike, not according to how someone else, you know, the length that might have been appropriate for somebody else. I really need to do it for me. And part of that was, you know, I'd felt so much pressure over the previous few years to grieve how everybody thought I was supposed to grieve. And I felt very pressured into that. And I really wanted the freedom and the liberty to really process this Appalachian Trail, how I felt was best for me.
Did you end up doing any grieving on trail?
You know, I think one of the big lessons that I learned on trail was that I was more healed than I thought I was. I thought I was a lot more broken. I think the biggest lesson that I came away with is, you know, I have a pretty strong faith, and there's this Bible verse that talks about being grateful in all circumstances. And I think when I had previously reflected on that verse, I thought it meant that we're supposed to be grateful for everything that happened to us, right? And I was like, I don't get it, right? Because I can't be grateful for the fact that my husband passed away, nor can any of us be grateful for anything negative that happens in our life or any hard moments that we come across. But that's not actually what it says, right? It says that we should be grateful in all circumstances. And that really made a huge impact on me and really stuck with me while I was on trail, because, you know, I wasn't being asked to be grateful for the fact that my husband passed away. I was, however, being asked to be grateful in that situation, meaning I could be grateful for the fact that it gave me a newfound sense of empathy. I could be grateful for the fact that it humbled me, right? I had a pretty charmed life prior to that, pretty privileged life. It humbled me to be able to, you know, maybe understand where other folks could be coming from, because hard is hard and we all have different hearts in our life. I could be grateful for the fact that it gave me a point of connection with other family members of mine who had been going through different kinds of hard, right? They were going through maybe addiction issues, other family issues. And I think that, you know, prior to my hard experience, it was hard for them to find somebody to have a connection with. And all of a sudden, it was like this big red beacon appeared over my head that was like, hey, guys, I'm not perfect either. My life isn't going so well. Right. And as soon as I really started focusing myself on this idea of gratitude, I mean, so many things transformed in my life and I could see the world in such a different perspective.
This lesson was crystallized for Brittany on trail in the Smoky Mountains. For miles, she'd been looking forward to Charlie's Bunyan, a 0.1-mile blue blaze off the AT. It's a rock outcropping with a 360-degree view, and it held a special memory for her. She'd been there with her husband when they were dating.
And it was a perfect day when Brian and I went. I mean, it was clear. You could see every mountain cut out like it was paper across the sky. It was phenomenal, right? And I had been looking forward to that view since Springer Mountain. I get to Newfound Gap and the snow was starting to come. I had a ride into town that night, but I decided to push on. And because I really wanted to see if I could get to Charlie's Bunyan for sunrise and be able to see the sunrise from this point. Well, by the time that I get up to the shelter that night, I mean, it's a full-blown blizzard. It is just a whiteout conditions. You can hardly see past the posts of the shelter because the snow is blowing in so hard. I go to bed that night just hoping that this storm clears so that I can see this view that I had been dreaming of. Well, sure enough, I wake up in the morning and it is still blowing. It is still a blizzard. My heart sinks. But I hike out that morning. I get to Charlie's Bunyan. And it's exactly how I was expecting it to be. It was a complete whiteout. It just looked like this harsh rock sticking out in this, you know, sea of white snow. And my heart just sank. And I hiked the rest of the day just telling myself, you know, don't be disappointed. Don't be disappointed, right? And all of a sudden, you know, the snow started to clear and the trees just peeked through those blizzards. And it was one of the most beautiful sights that I've ever seen. You could just tell the outline of this forest in just the faintest of ways. And I thought to myself, oh, I get it. This is what it means to be grateful in all circumstances. I really wish that I've gotten to see Charlie's Bunyan on a clear day again, but I didn't. But what I did get to see is this fresh fallen snow and the clearing and how it showed in the trees. And you know what? Nobody else got to see that day. It stuck with me for the rest of the trail. You know, they say no pain, no rain, no main, right? And you get pain and you get rain. And every time it rained, I thought to myself, I don't have to be thankful that it is raining right now, but I can sure be thankful that the leaves turn this fluorescent green when the rain stops. And I can be grateful for the fact that it is just calming to hear kind of the drizzle of rain dripping off all of the leaves. Other people don't get to necessarily experience that in that moment. And, you know, it really gives you something to be thankful for. And for me, I think that that's one of the reasons why I never wanted to stop hiking while I was on the trail, is because I was just so grateful to be there and so grateful to be there doing something that I just really wanted to do.
Brittany has carried this sense of independence and gratitude into her off-trail life, while still spending time on trail, backpacking, and volunteering. And she's thrilled for anyone who might be considering hiking the AT. Like Laura, who had to postpone her spring 2020 through hike due to the pandemic. Brittany talked about the things that she worried about heading onto the trail, money, family, career. And Laura has these worries too. But as you'll hear, there are extra layers of consideration for her as a Latina woman and the daughter of immigrants. Laura's lived near Atlanta, Georgia for much of her life, so the Appalachian Mountains have a special place in her heart.
My relationship with the Appalachian Trail is as a Georgia resident. I've kind of been section hiking it and hiking the mountains around it for pretty much, I guess, my whole life. You know, any drive outside of the metro area up north is going to involve going through there, so getting familiar through day hikes, and even before I knew what the Appalachian Trail was, running into a thru hiker one day and thinking, wow, that's a really cool thing to do. Hope I get to do something like that one day.
Laura didn't know about the AT when she bumped into that gentleman a year and a half ago, but it planted an idea that took root.
I started learning more about it, and I started doing camping, doing some reading, and we had already made a plan sort of to start backpacking with my husband. And then I think it just was a combination of that and just realizing once I learned about the AT and, you know, people go off for 6 months and do this, that it made sense for where I was in my life, being in a career and a job that I liked but didn't love, and wanting to do something really different for myself. You know, as much as I love my parents, kind of always living up to their expectations and trying to be a good oldest daughter, especially to Latin American immigrant parents, it's a personal offense to them if I'm not living up to their expectations. And so just trying to move past that.
Laura explained to me that she feels both her parents' love and their expectations deeply. They sacrificed a lot for her to come to this country. And as the oldest daughter, they expected her to get a good college education and a stable career. Laura worked hard and checked off these achievements.
Just because you're told that that's what you should aspire to doesn't make it that that's what you want ultimately. And after doing all of that, I guess I just kind of realized slowly but surely that it doesn't necessarily align with the goals that I have for myself and my values that I want to espouse. And so it's hard because in a way, I don't think they're disappointed, but they definitely had a hard time coming to terms with my decision to thru-hike, especially because it's something so different from anything that they've ever been exposed to that, you know, it's not just like you're going on a hike or you're going on a camping trip or you're going on a road trip. Those things in themselves would be a little hard for them to understand, but this is just something completely out of anything in the world that they've ever experienced.
And you've talked with them a bit about the whys for you behind wanting to hike?
Yes, I have talked a little bit about the whys. Does that stop my dad from trying to talk me out of it? No. And I know it comes from a place of being overprotective and being very worried that anything could happen to me, because it's not, you know, for me, it's not just you're a woman and you're going to be out in the woods doing something that maybe you haven't done your whole life, but it's also like you're going through the South and you're a Latin American woman, like, how's that going to look in very rural areas? I definitely had a tough time telling them, and I actually waited until the very last minute when I was supposed to leave this year, and then obviously didn't end up leaving. But in a way, that's been good because it's opened us up to dialogue and getting them used to the idea that I'm going, and, you know, I appreciate their feedback, but I'm going. And that's it. I will think of them and be as communicative as I can, but nothing's going to stop me from going.
Yeah, it's something that you really want to do for yourself.
I'm happy with the decisions I've made up to this point, and, you know, I'm still taking their advice on a lot of stuff, but I also feel like it comes a time where I have to just make a call for myself, and that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm doing.
Since Laura didn't get to hike the AT this spring, she's actually had time to be able to take her father on the trail with her for a backpacking trip, which has helped him gain some insight into her love of the trail. As you heard, Laura has expressed a need to hike the AT for herself, but she's also doing it so that other women of color can see themselves on trail too.
Representation is really important, right? And me being out there, hopefully I can show people that it can be done. And I'm lucky in that I have the resources and a ton of privilege to be able to go out and do a thru hike and come back and, you know, still be financially stable and have a, you know, a support system. And so hopefully that shows people that, I mean, even just encourages women to go out backpacking by themselves. Because the first time, you know, before I went on my first solo trip, it was definitely a little nerve-wracking, but just getting out there and hopefully starting conversations with thru-hikers that are out there that most likely are going to be from a pretty different background to myself, and hopefully exposing them to new ideas and pushing people to think in a different way about how they see representation in the outdoors and different voices.
One of the stories that's told over and over again about the AT is how welcoming the community is. The hikers take on trail names, they create a world on trail. But as we heard two episodes back from Shalitha Curtis, imagining a welcoming community can be difficult for women of color. Laura wants to be able to have constructive conversations about race with white hikers. That's an important part of community for her, as it should be for anyone who wants to cultivate a more inclusive trail.
I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges, not necessarily finding people to connect with, because obviously if we're all out there, we're going to have certain things in common to even make the decision to go out on a trail. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be challenging finding people who are willing to have tough conversations about diversity, real conversations, and even people who have good intentions and speak up within the community, quote unquote. I reached out to somebody recently and to try to have a dialogue and say, you know, I could see how this could be misconstrued this way, just giving you that feedback, and unfortunately being met with, you know, defensiveness. And I think that that is a totally natural response, right? I mean, I have that response too, of being like, well, but, you know, X, Y, and Z. But it's really important to take the time to, I guess, ask yourself why you're being defensive, and then put that aside, put your ego aside, and really try to take the time to think about it from somebody else's perspective. I think Shalitha's experience, who you talked to on the last podcast, with the AT Facebook group, that people said, well, you know, I've never experienced racism, so I think maybe you could be taking things the wrong way. I don't think that's fair to say to someone, because everyone's going through life with a different perspective. And as a person of color, you've experienced certain things enough times that you know when something, you know how to call something what it is when you need to. And it's not like it brings us pleasure to do those things. It's hard and scary and exhausting. But hopefully, yeah, if more white peers that are out there can be open to those conversations and kind of push through their own kind of insecurities and defensiveness, push aside their ego and get to a point where they can really understand what we're going through, and from that understanding, find ways to actually speak up and speak out for people of color, so that, you know, especially Black women have more of a chance to get platforms and feel more comfortable actually going out and doing things like through hikes and, you know, backpacking and more outdoor activities.
It's worth calling out here that it's exhausting for women of color to do the work of educating white folks, on trail and off. And it's even more tiring if white hikers are defensive or not open to conversation. Laura's emphasizing that if you're a white person and a person of color tells you that they experienced racism, believe them. Full stop. That's it. Just believe them. So would you say that One of your reasons for hiking the AT is to show up as a Latina woman on trail, but it's also, you know, some concern about these conversations and how people might react that also is a bit of a challenge in following through on that dream? Would you say that that's true?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's hard because I'm naturally introverted, and also it's just exhausting to have these conversations. I think when people say, like, we should be thanking Black women, we should be thanking women of color for educating us, even it took me a while to understand what that really meant. But after trying to have a conversation with one person and me being completely emotionally drained to the point where I just had to basically take the rest of the day off, you know, yeah, it's hard. And add to that the stress of a through hike that every, you know, the normal stresses of a through hike of being deprived and being exhausted and being away from your family and loved ones. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a challenge, but I want to do it. And I'm confident that I'm going to be able to finish and hopefully carry that message through.
It's no surprise that Laura's a conscientious hiker, keeping in mind the health and sustainability of the trail and the surrounding towns above all else. It's why she put off her hike this year. And it's why, if it's possible to hike in 2021, she'll be doing what's called a flip-flop, hiking from the middle point of the trail north to Maine, and then returning to the middle to hike south to Springer Mountain in Georgia. By flip-flopping, Laura will be hiking on more popular areas of the trail when there are fewer thru-hikers there, lessening the overall impact. There's another side benefit, too. It means she'll end at home in Georgia.
The idea of being able to celebrate with my parents on Springer, that's going to be awesome. Something that I probably won't get to do if I finish in Maine. And on a more basic needs level, I'll be 2 hours from my house and a shower and my bed. So even better.
I asked Laura what questions she would have for another thru hiker who's completed the trail. One question she had was it worth it? All that you give up to hike the trail. Here's Brittany's answer.
What I would tell her is that, I don't know you, Laura, but I want you to hike the trail so badly because it's such a wonderful experience. So I really like to think of it not as a sacrifice, but much more as an investment into you. And I don't think many of us do a very good job of investing in ourselves, right? I think we've been taught for a very long time to think that any time that we spend on ourselves, bettering ourselves, right, it's selfish. We're sacrificing what we could be giving to others. But the reality is that if you take and you take and you take and you take and you take from yourself, you know, at some point, there's really not a lot less to give. And sometimes you do need to then make those investments back into who you are, back into your soul, back into your happiness, what brings you joy. And you're going to have a lot more to be able to give to your career, to give to your family, to give to your friends.
Another question Laura had was about when you know it's time to leave the trail. And Brittany's answer is what I want to leave us with today. She shared that it's really different for everyone, and there are circumstances out of your control that can take you away, like injury, illness, or financial difficulties. But remember that why that we talked about at the start of the show? That why is the cornerstone of your hike.
I struggled when I got off trail, and I think a lot of people do. We talk about it a lot in the thru-hiking community about post-trail depression. I got to Katahdin, and I theoretically hiked, you know, the whole trail, but I wasn't done with my mission, and I'm still struggling with that today, trying to figure out what is next, because, you know, I think that I have a lot more miles in me to be able to hike before I can kind of, you know, hang that sign that says mission complete. So I think if she really figures out, or anybody listening figures out why you're out there and what you're out there to do, even if you don't make it all the way, as long as you went out there to fulfill what you did, I mean, it's a successful hike.
You can learn more about hiking the AT at appalachiantrail.org. We'll link a resource in the show notes. Thank you to Laura Alarcon and Brittany Comans for contributing to this episode of Where We Walk, Stories of the Appalachian Trail, made in collaboration with the Appalachian Trail Conservancy with support from REI. If you want to learn more about these two women, more info is listed in our show notes and via the episode landing page on she-explorers.com. This was part 4 of 6 of the Where We Walk miniseries. Tune in next Monday for episode 5. And in the meantime, a new episode of She Explorers is available on Wednesday. This episode was hosted by me, Gail Straub, with Laura Borchewski. Where We Walk is a She Explores miniseries and a production of Ravel Media.